I just want to start off by welcoming you to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, you're originally from Holland, right?
Yeah.
When did you first become interested in playing music?
I actually started playing the flute when I was 8 years old, and then I actually, when I was 10, I started playing the saxophone. But I already from very young age listened a lot to music, and my father used to listen a lot to jazz, and so yeah, it was actually for me a very natural thing to listen to jazz music and other kinds of music, and I already very fast started playing along with CDs or radio and by ear trying to catch the melody actually. So yeah, it was already very soon a very natural thing for me to be busy with music.
What is it about jazz that you find so attractive?
Well, the improvisation factor is very attractive to me because well, it's a kind of the freedom to create something together with other musicians in the moment is very appealing to me, and I just yeah, the melodic playing, of course, as a saxophone player, just always was I really liked it a lot. I didn't listen that much to the pianist or the drummer or like the rhythm section. I was always focused on the melody, the player that played the melody, and yeah, actually, just the setting of the instruments and the beat, the groove, the swing was also very yeah.
So you find it's a perfect vehicle for you to express yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to throw some names your way, and I just want you to tell me what your impressions are on these musicians.
Okay.
Virginia Mayhew.
I've heard her on a CD. She's great. I don't know that much about her, but I think she's a great player, definitely.
I think this next person you probably know pretty well, Candy Dulfer.
Yeah, I know her, definitely. She's from Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's been on the scene for quite a while, and I think that she brought the fact that, women can be thrust into the forefront and sort of play just as well as men can.
Yeah, of course we can. I mean, it's just a fact that there are far few female jazz musicians that really work on a highly professional level are being asked for tours. It's still, yeah, to me there are too few women in the jazz scene who are really making a career and just make their living out of playing concerts and touring, but of course we have as much qualities as men, of course.
Yeah, there's a sax player from Sweden that really knocked me out the first time I heard her. Her name is Amanda Sedgwick.
Yeah, I know her.
Have you heard her stuff at all, or?
Yeah, I heard it. I heard a bit. She's also great, definitely. I
Yeah.
mean, there are many female sax players nowadays, so that's a great thing.
Nicole Joe is another one who I've been friends with for a while now, but she's really making a mark over in North America.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, someone I think that every sax player, modern day sax player, I think may have been influenced by is Jane Ira Bloom.
Well, influenced. I mean, I got to know her when I was living in New York 3 years ago, and she's a great player. I mean, very beautiful player. But yeah, of course, I'm from Europe, and yeah, I started looking abroad and playing a lot abroad, like four or 5 years ago, and before that, the great sax players of the jazz history had been really important to me, like Coltrane and Cannibal Adderley. and all those kind of guys have been very important to me. But then, yeah, it was very good for me to see this strong female scene in America. I believe that it's stronger in America than in Holland, or in Europe, let's say.
What was the most important lesson that you learned when you were at the conservatory in Amsterdam?
Well, of course, I learned the basis of jazz harmony and jazz history and theory, and the basis of saxophone playing itself, and that has been extremely important. And I of course learned how to study, which is very important for a musician, because it never ends, you know. You need to develop continuously. Yeah.
Is there anyone else in your family who's musical?
Well, my family is pretty musical, but there are no musicians.
No,
professional musicians. No.
You're the one who's setting the pace for the rest of your family.
Yeah.
What are some of your all-time favorite recordings in jazz?
Well, Kind of Blue is of course really important to me, with Miles Davis. But like most of the records of Coltrane have been and still are very important to me. Then I favorite record of mine is the one with Cannibal Adderley and Nancy Wilson. And there are so many, it's hard to come up with all the favorite recordings. Wayne Shorter, I love him. Adam's Apple, and but also the more modern records of him are very important to me. And I also love Chris Potter's playing. But then I'm also listening a lot to classical music, for example, Maria Callas, the opera singer. Extremely important for me. So there are so many beautiful records which have something special or beautiful.
You mentioned Maria Callas. What are you? What is it about her that you're picking up on, that you're incorporating into your playing?
Well, the lyrical, intense way of singing or playing, and the strong melodies, and it's going very deep. It's very deep music. It's very, also in a certain way, very spiritual music, I think. It's very emotional music, and it hits right the core of important aspects of music for me. And and if I listen to the great jazz musicians, they all have that, you know. And so yeah, that's actually what is important to me.
Do you turn to classical music for inspiration?
Well, yeah, when I listen to her, or listen to Bach, or I listen to Beethoven, or it's definitely very inspiring. Yeah.
Now, you had an amazing opportunity to study at the Manhattan School of Music in New York. What was it like studying with the likes of Dave Liebman, Dick Oates, and Chris Potter?
Yeah, it was really fantastic, because it was for me, of course, when you live in Europe, and in Europe we are very looking up to, of course, these great American players, and the American jazz is so popular in Europe, and it's actually the standard of how we all want to play or how we want to be. And of course this has been very strong, and it is still very important, but now you see, of course, that the European jazz is also really becoming an important scene. But yeah, for me it was just amazing to study with these great legends or these great examples, and to just meet them and learn from them. And yeah, it was great, because there's just totally different vibe in New York, of course, concerning the way people live music in daily life, or how they handle it, or how they talk about it, and how they study, or how they play. The energy is just very intense, and that was beautiful for me to see how focused and how eager these people were. And I really realized even more how much I love music and how much I want to be part of it or work with it. So it was a very important experience.
One of the things that I really admire about European jazz is the way that most artists implement folkloric melodies into their compositions.
Yeah.
Do you do that as well when you're composing?
Well, no, I actually haven't been doing that. My main inspiration was actually American jazz music, but now I slowly start to also be interested in this way of playing, like what you were saying, the European style of using this folklore traditions, or mm-hmm. There's definitely European sound, so which I like also. So I'm starting a little bit to do that now, actually. So that's a funny thing, actually.
What brand of instruments do you prefer playing?
Which brand?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm having an endorsement with Selmer.
Okay.
So they are helping me out with instruments, and I just because I've always been playing on a Selmer Mark VI alto, but now I'm playing on this more newer instruments, like a reference, but always Selmer.
Are there any specific brand of reeds that you like to use?
Yeah, I'm using this Van Doren 3.5, or I used to play always Rico Real, number 3.5.
When it comes to performing, who are some musicians who have influenced you the most? You mentioned before Cannonball Adderley and John Coltrane. Were there any other musicians?
Yeah, like Wayne Shorter, of course, has been very important. Yeah, those have been the three important players, concert, saxophone, and I've been touring with Terrilyn Carrington, and she has been also important for me, concerned the way you play together, or how a band should play together or sound together. I learned a lot from her.
Terry's not only an amazing drummer, but she's an amazing musician.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, she's really been out there, you know.
Yeah.
Really making an impact, I think.
No, she did. Definitely does, yeah.
When it comes to composing, who have been some of your influences?
Well, it's funny, actually, because I started composing, 4 years ago, so I didn't. Actually, I don't have a very long history with composing, but I actually was really inspired by these lessons that I got from Dick Oates. We talked a lot about composing, and actually also with Dave Liebman. And the composition of Dave Holland really inspired me. And the more modern composers actually inspired me, like music of Wayne Shorter and, like I was saying, Dave Holland. Yeah, those guys really inspired me.
Do you remember your earliest musical memory?
Yeah, I started listening actually to pop music, and I used to always listen to Sade's music, the singer, and I was really always trying to play along with it, like with my flute, which actually made no sense because I really loved to do that, and I was like 8 years old, and then I started to play. You have in Holland this marching bands. I started playing in a band, and then we were playing all this classical music, and I loved it, but I really didn't like this marching music thing. And then one day there was a jazz band playing along with us, and that really really impressed me, because there was a saxophone player and they were playing jazz music and improvising, and it really blew me away.
Yeah. So,
that was really my first My first thing with jazz music, actually.
What are you listening to these days?
These days, I'm listening actually to all kinds of styles, like pop music. I'm listening actually a lot to the pop musicians, which were very very famous when I was younger, very popular, like Sting, Phil Collins, those kind of guys. But I also like very much R&B music or hip hop music. But then again, I'm listening nowadays a lot to Wayne Shorter again, and yeah, that's actually the music I'm listening to. But mainly, the more I go on, the more I go back to the tradition, because you know, you just understand better how amazing actually it was. The more you learn, the more you understand how incredible the legends were.
You know, I have to tell you, I've been listening a lot to Miles Davis. There was a box set released recently of his performances at the Montreux Jazz Festival from 1973 to 1991. And, you know, it's just incredible listening to that musician, the way he performs and his whole concept about music.
Yeah.
You know, and you could spend a whole lifetime just analyzing the album Kind of Blue.
It's amazing. It's totally amazing. The beautiness and the space also they took while playing. And it's just perfect music. I mean, when you listen to the Miles Davis Quintet, actually everything that comes after it is like you realize, okay, I'll better just listen to Miles, because that's just the Bible, basically, of jazz playing.
Well, you know, even the bands that he had throughout the 50s and 60s, and even when he got into the more experimental stuff in the 70s, he still managed to maintain that sound.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just incredible.
Yeah, he was a genius. I mean, he also was so good in getting the right people to play with each other and choosing the right music. And yeah, he was just a musical genius, basically, not only improvising amazingly, but just everything that comes along with it. He had a total vision of how it should sound, I think.
One of the things that I really admired about Miles was the way that he surrounded himself with young people to get fresh ideas.
Yeah.
And I think that was important. And, you know, it's really funny, because even now in 2006, when you go back and listen to his music, it's still fresh.
Yeah, definitely. It's just timeless. It's so modern. And that's the strong thing about it.
Yeah. How long has your quartet been together?
Now it has been together for 4 years.
And your album, First Avenue, how long did that take to record?
One day. And actually the second one, for the rhythm too, it didn't take a long time actually, because I just wrote the songs, and that took, of course, a long time to have the music all ready and clearly, like, the concept had to be clear. But the recording of it, actually, you know, I like first takes, so, because I think the energy is yeah, there, and people play fresh ideas, and they don't play at their automatic pilot, let's say.
Yeah.
So, one or two takes it took for each song, and that was it, actually.
Does it take you a long time to compose a piece of music?
Well, it just totally depends. Sometimes I write a song in half an hour, and sometimes I'm working for weeks on it. It just depends. Sometimes you just have the inspiration or the right song or the right ideas, and it just comes out naturally. And other times you just don't know how to end it or start it or make it interesting. And it just totally depends on the moment.
So what's on tap for you for the rest of 2006 and leading into 2007? Do you have any albums planned or tours or any other activities that you're working on?
Yeah, I'm working on a new CD, but my first two CDs, I recorded them for Munich Records, and unfortunately Munich Records quit the jazz department, because the owner director passed away. So they unfortunately had to stop releasing jazz records. And so now I'm just studying a little bit my options. I have several record labels who are interested in recording a CD with me. So now I'm actually more orienting a little bit what to do, and
transformation.
But I'm writing already the music, and I think around January, February, I'll start recording the CD. But which label, I don't know yet.
How has the internet played a role in your life?
Well, now it's playing an important role. I mean, also the way we are now talking with each other is, of course, incredible.
Yeah.
And, well, of course, it makes the world a whole lot smaller, and it's easier to stay in contact with people around the world, and it's extremely useful. And I'm now working also on a more professional website. I have a manager now, and we're trying to make it more interactive, so that musicians fan mail, how do you say, people who are interested in my project can just visit me and get to know more about my project and which are the developments, instead of just reading the concert itinerary, etc. But it's extremely important, and of course the whole role of a record label is of course now far less stronger, because we can of course sell our own CDs via internet, and it's a very important
it gives you a sense of independence, and you can have I think more focus as to what you really want to do.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, definitely. Well, and then I concerned my planning for the coming year. I'm trying with my manager now to organize a tour in the States. I'm playing on the IAGE in January in New York. And so we're trying to organize a tour around in January. I will play more concerts in New York. Then I'm doing some concerts here in Holland, and then in from March until June I will tour in Europe with my band.
So you're pretty busy.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Definitely.
Do you remember the very first concert, jazz concert that you ever attended?
Yeah, that must have been, because I'm not from the north of Holland, and the first jazz concert I saw was of Kenny Garrett in the north of Holland, so that was very impressive.
Yeah, he's certainly a player to be reckoned with. He's been on the scene for quite a while now.
Yeah.
You know, what I love about your playing is that it seems to be so effortless, and you swing like crazy. Do you ever find time to practice?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I really feel like I have to practice, and it also gives, it just helps me not only grow musically and technically, but also just be self-secure on stage. Because if I, of course, I'm not practicing the whole day, and I just practice like, not even every day, but just a couple of hours, a couple of days a week are very important. Because if I don't do that, I just... I get insecure on stage, basically.
Are there any special methods or techniques that you use while you're practicing?
Well, I try always to practice as musically as possible. So not only scales or technical things, but everything I practice should be applicable in my solos, in my improvisations, actually. And I just try to also develop a little bit the creativity, let's say. So I'm thinking during my practicing what I want to say during a solo, or what do I want to express, and how I can do that as clear as possible. those kind of things are also important to think about, at least.
Improvising could be such a cathartic experience where, you know, possibilities are endless. Now, you improvise a great deal in your playing now. What does improvising mean to you?
Well, like I said, it's really a thing of freedom, you know. I mean, it's just beautiful to be there in the moment and be on stage and just create a musical moment with your band. And what I'm also teaching at the conservatory here in Amsterdam, and what you see, of course, a lot with students is that they are so focused on their own playing so that they totally forget to listen to the band or what's happening around them, and so they're not totally actually present at the moment, but they're just playing what they have been practicing. And I try to avoid that, and I think that's the biggest challenge, just to step away from all the knowledge you have and just be as creative as creative as possible at the moment. And that's really beautiful if you are able to lead the band to a certain musical direction. Well, if I manage to do that, I'm very happy.
And listening is such an important skill.
Definitely.
You know,
it's hard also sometimes, of course. But just, it's already very important when you are aware of this thing, because a lot of musicians just forget about it and try to impress the audience or those kind of things, which are actually unimportant.
Outside of your own band, if you had to form a dream band, who would it consist of, and what piece of music would you play?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would love to play with Miles Davis, but musicians like like Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter, those kind of musicians who are so totally free and standing above any kind of musical level and are just so totally free in using every aspect in music. Those are my inspirators. So if it would be possible to play with them, that would be incredible. And I think you grow really fast if you play when you play with those kind of musicians, because they are so strong, so they in what they do. So I would love to play with that. And playing already with Terrell and Carrington is very inspiring, and it really made me grow musically.
One of my favorite sax players, who just happens to be Canadian, is Jane Bonnet. Are you familiar with her at all?
Yeah. She's great.
Yeah, she's done a lot of work with Cuban musicians as well, but she's such a free player.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's great.
Yeah. Well, there's a tune that I really like of yours. It's called A Walk.
Yeah.
For me, that's a killer number, and it features some really tricky changes. It sounds like it could be a jazz standard, actually.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Did that take you long to compose, or was it a tricky piece to put together?
No, that came very fast, actually. Yeah, it was. It's mainly this groove that this bass line, which is just continuously playing, and it's a very easy song, actually. But then I wrote a second part, an interlude, and to it. But actually, the frame of the song is the melody.
There's another composition of yours that I've always been intrigued about. It's Thanks to Him. Now, who's this song about?
I actually didn't write it. It's a song of the piano player, Rob van Bavel.
Okay.
So I know that he wrote it for his father, but that's the only thing I know.
What inspires you?
When I started studying jazz, and especially before I went to New York, I was a little bit stuck musically, because I thought I was a pretty traditional player. So as soon as it became a bit more modern or harmonically a little different, then I thought I was not really allowed, because it didn't fit in the tradition. And so when I went to New York, I met a lot of musicians who were very free and took harmonically a lot of space and a lot of freedom and a lot of risks. And when I hear musicians play in that way, then it feels very inspiring, because to feel free musically, or hear musicians play who take a lot of freedom and a lot of risks, that's actually also kind of a way I like to stand in life. So that's very inspiring, actually, to be as less as possible attached to rules or a tradition. And I mean, I love the tradition, and I always keep that a part of my musical playing, or the way I enjoy music or play it. But yeah, the freedom is very important to me.
It goes to show you that maintaining a childlike quality in your life is very important.
Yeah.
How did you happen to release your recordings on 215 Records?
Well, actually, I didn't do that work. It was my Dutch label which found this distributor, actually. So Munich Records is a Dutch label, and they just have, of course, distributors in each country. So I don't know exactly how they got in contact, but now, unfortunately, it's a little difficult. I'm not worrying at all about the next step I will take. Just a matter of time, actually.
Your latest album's entitled For the Rhythm, right?
Yeah.
Now, that album features some great covers, and I wanted to ask you, when you cover a standard that has been played so many times by other artists, how do you approach playing a piece of music that has been regarded as a staple in the jazz repertory?
I actually approach it exactly the same as when I'm playing on my original music. I try to be as personal as possible, or just as stay as close as possible to my own style, and not try to imitate musicians or traditions. And of course, in the end, I'm still a very traditional player, but I try at least not to sound as somebody, but just try to be myself, and that's the way I approach it, actually.
There's another composition that really touched me, and it features some amazing playing from Eduardo Reghini.
Yeah.
The piece is called Song for CT, and I was wondering what this piece is about.
It's actually a song I wrote it for my mother. My mother's called CT, and she always was saying to me, well, you always write songs for famous musicians or for your boyfriend, and in this case Eduardo Reghini is my partner, the guitar player. So she said, why don't you write a song for me? And I thought, you're totally right. So I tried to write a song for her.
Were your parents did they encourage you to play music?
Yeah, definitely. My father was very he really tried to motivate me, and my mother also loves music, so they were both very helpful, and they always wanted to support me. Also, when I wanted to study at the conservatory, my mother was very supportive.
So this was a big plus for you in your early development.
Definitely.
Now, for your latest release, how did the sessions come about?
I actually met, for example, Terrilyn at the IAGE a couple of years ago when I was part of the Sisters in Jazz competition, and she was coaching us. So we did a tour while she was just helping us out and giving musical commands and just helping us out. And so she wrote for my first CD the liner notes, and she liked the CD a lot, so I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to have her on my CD? So I asked her, and she was immediately very positive, and then I asked Daryl Hall, the bassist, because I studied with him at the Manhattan School of Music, and and for the rest, the guitar players, my boyfriend, but he's from Italy, He also had been studying at the conservatory in Amsterdam, and the pianist Rob van Bavel, he's an amazing piano player, and I met him. He was my teacher at the conservatory, actually, and the bass player, because there are five songs on which Daryl Hall is playing bass, and the other five songs is Jeroen Vierdag, a Dutch bassist. And I wrote the music, and Terling came to Holland, and Daryl Hall too, of course, and then we recorded in a great studio here in Holland, and we also did it in 2 days, so it was a fast thing also.
What would be the most important advice that you would give an up-and-coming musician?
Try to really have clearly in mind what you want to achieve with music, and talk a lot of with musicians about how they manage to get where they are musically, and because it's just such a hard profession often, you know. I mean, it's not like you're playing every day. I mean, it's always coming up, and you know, I mean, it's a very unregular life, and all those things, you just have to be able to deal with it, and it's not sometimes very easy. So and when you know very well what you want, it will be easier. But if you're very insecure, you're not very sure if you totally like music or the profession or all the aspects of it, then I would advise just to think again a bit better if you want it, because there are so many great musicians, and it's just not an easy life. I mean, even the greatest musicians have sometimes struggles playing enough or having enough work. So it's not an easy profession, but it's beautiful if it works, when it works.
I'd like to thank you for dropping by today. It's been a real pleasure.
Okay, for me too. Thanks a lot.